Next item is going to be a report from our State Water Board liaison, Mr. Steve Moore. Welcome.
Thank you, board members. And thanks for those reports, too. Those are great reports and relate closely to a lot of the initiatives that we're hoping to champion at the State Water Board level. So really appreciate board members' participation in the broader discussions of things like water supply reliability, wetland restoration, you know, working with Native Americans, et cetera. You know, just a lot going on, but a lot to be excited about and optimistic about. So I hope I have an optimistic report to give you today. It's always a pleasure to represent you as your liaison. So I'm, for the record, State Board Member Stephen Moore. And as usual, I'll organize my remarks according to first going over budget-related items, talk about some recent activities at the State Water Board, and then touch on a couple of upcoming activities, and then wrap up with some legislation discussions. And this being the legislative season, there's a lot there, and I wish I could go into more detail than I'll be able to, but we'll talk about it a little bit and welcome questions and discussion. So on budget-related items, in July, I reported about the governor's budget for this fiscal year and the increased personnel positions he provided for various programs, such as the groundwater sustainability, hydraulic fracturing, and 401 certification program for dredge and fill waters and wetlands. The legislature has determined the water boards need to be mostly fee-supported, and the general fund is almost non-existent in terms of supporting staff positions and work. That's our reality. So this week, on Tuesday, after a lengthy hearing, State Water Board adopted updated fees for different permitting programs that are necessary to support our existing programs, to maintain a fiscally prudent reserve and accommodate some pay raises, as well as pay for these new authorized positions that we discussed before. So for example, the fees in the 401 certification program have been increased by an average of 19.7% above last year to pay for these new positions. But they were recommended by a third-party audit of our 401 program in 2013. I also point out that the fee program in the 401 certs has been changed from a larger one-time application fee to a three-tiered fee of lower increments. So it includes an application fee, but also a component of an annual fee representing, you know, our staff work efforts, and then a post-project monitoring fee because of the need to track our staff's efforts to track compliance with conditions for dredge and fill permits. I'll also note that ecological restoration projects have reduced fees compared to other dredge and fill projects. So there's a lot of complexity within the system, but I wanted to just touch on some highlights there. The fees went up the most for dairies at 33% relative to last year. This is in part due to last year's suspension of half of their increase that was needed then to acknowledge economic issues, and their high water quality threat and complexity. And, you know, people have valid questions. Why is this going up so much? But it's due in part, we think, to the scale of the program with less sites, having to support relatively more staff. You have economies of scale in our other programs where you have just more dischargers, if you will. We heard concerns from dairies throughout the state, but not as much from this region. I don't know if it's as important here. Some fees went down proportionally to the staffing requirements, including for NPDES point source permits at a 3.2 reduction of fees, and NPDES stormwater permit fees came down 8.9%. So just to give you a flavor for how pleasant these fee hearings can be, I'll note that not a single party attended this hours-long hearing to support these fee decreases. Thank you for lowering the fee. We didn't get any of that. So the fees for the irrigated lands regulatory program were not changed. They stayed the same. The WDR permit fees went up by 7.9%, which was difficult for many stakeholders. So to wrap this up, you know, the ag interests, agricultural, repeatedly asked for greater general fund support for their programs, pointing to public benefit, and the improved state fiscal health. And so, you know, as part of this dialogue, we reply that it's not in our authority to influence this budgeting structure. It is up to the legislature. The state board members committed us to a process that would improve our stakeholder outreach this year to give earlier warning when allowed. There's a lot of limitations on when we can talk about budget. So we can indicate where budget shortfalls may occur, and then we can pass information along to representatives who want to work with the legislature to change the funding of our programs toward more general funding. You know, we can provide information, but we cannot decide how much general fund is used to support our staff and contracts. So that's important, and not everyone really gets that, but we're learning collectively. So moving on to other items, recent activities on the same agenda this week as the updated permit fees was our adoption of revised general statewide waste discharge requirements for small domestic wastewater systems and the accompanying CEQA negative declaration. The order that was updated was order 97-10 from 14 years ago. And changes to this general order addressed some clarification on consistency with the on-site wastewater treatment system policy, which we were just discussing. Also the recycled water policy, the Title 22 recycled water requirements, and an evaluation process to determine the need for nitrogen effluent limits for discharges above 20,000 gallons per day systems. Now, since these are WDRs, we're only talking about discharges to land from small domestic wastewater treatment systems that range from septic, community septic systems to small treatment plants. As far as the regional boards go, this is more heavily used by the Central Valley region. We increased the maximum flow rate from 20,000 gallons per day to 100,000 gallons per day, or 0.1 MGD, for coverage under this statewide order. We believe this will create more efficiency in our WDR program, and this type of statewide action, we hope, will eventually offset the need for WDR program fee increases by reducing the need to bring hundreds of individual WDRs before regional boards for adoption. This is an example of how we're trying to address the increasing of fees so that we're more efficient with our staff resources. So we think that was a good accomplishment. We worked closely with regional board representatives to accomplish this adoption. It's in effect immediately and available for your use. And so we encourage your staff to use it if it makes sense. Emergency water conservation regulations. That was where the state water board, you know, people in the state realized there was a state water board because it got in the newspapers a lot. And you know that it went into, and these regulations became law on July 29th. And just to recap, the actions required of all individual Californians, businesses, residences, schools, institutions, and private property owners. There's four items. You know, one to remember is don't use a hose to wash your driveway. Use a broom, or you're breaking the law because of the severe drought. But also, what's really interesting is this our renewed relationship with urban water suppliers, and there are actions required keeping track of urban water use. And so on September 9th of this month, we received a report of overall urban water use in the state, which was reduced overall statewide by about 7% if you compare July 2013 to July 2014. And so this is in response to the governor's call to action, our emergency regulations, but actions by local water agencies to implement the drought measures in their urban water management plans. It really comes down to this. And overall, Californians pulling together to save water during this statewide emergency. For everyone interested, and if you're wondering what you can do, there's a lot of user-friendly recommendations at saveourwater.com. SaveOurWater.com. We just, you know, SaveOurWater.com. Did I mention? SaveOurWater.com. And I think probably people in the audience are probably doing all these things already. You know, one of the things I want to highlight is notably the community of Cambria here in the Central Coast region had the highest reduction per capita of the approximately 400 reporting agencies. So they get the gold medal. And so congratulations. You know, there's other ways to award medals. You know, part of the problem with this type of information is if you only look at percent reduction, you don't take into account what your baseline was. So there's other medals that we can give to communities, especially in the Monterey Peninsula, that already had a very low gallons per capita per day data. And this is all publicly available if you go to our website. If you're interested in comparing where your community is compared to the rest of the state, where your starting point was and where you are this year. So we'll receive our second monthly report on October 7th, where we'll look at August. You know, there were a lot of details involved, but you know, by having regulations, we're getting a response. And this is the reality of the situation. When we had voluntary, we got about half of these 400 agencies providing information. When it became mandatory, almost 98%. And we're working through the glitches to get 100%. We do have enforcement authority under the regs if we don't get compliance with reporting. And we've done our best, our level best, to make it as easy as possible to report. I may have mentioned this, but in the Division of Drinking Water, we have a very talented staff person who also is an elected district board member in the Carmichael Water District, named Mark Emerson, who developed a portal that's user-friendly for water districts to enter data and for us to efficiently collate it and report it back. So we'll continue to work cooperatively with our water agency partners to get this information out to the public and track it. Also this week, it was a 12-hour meeting on Tuesday, and we heard from what's been known as the Ag Expert Panel, which we received the final report from the State Water Board's Agricultural Expert Panel on recommendations for the Irrigated Lands Regulatory Program. And this report focuses on preventing pollution of groundwater from nitrogen. And we will be transmitting this report to the regional water boards and recommending implementation of these recommendations in the irrigated lands regulatory programs throughout the state. As far as the process from us having accepted the report on Tuesday, our staff, Darren Polemus, is going to work with the regional boards and sort of translating this ag panel report into, you know, what staff will do with it as we update our, whether it's waivers or WDRs for agricultural discharges. You know, this effort dates back to SBX 2-1 and our report to the legislature, wherein we made 15 recommendations, the 14th of which was to convene an expert panel on these issues of nitrate pollution and groundwater. In a related effort, the Department of Food and Agriculture had their Nitrogen Tracking Task Force as well. So we provided 13 questions to the panel for their consideration, developed by a self-selected advisory committee of the range of interests in the matter, water board staff, as well as state board members' questions formulated during consideration of the petition on the Central Coast region's agricultural discharge waiver. So all meetings of this ag panel were public. They were conducted in open session. As I reported in July, the draft report received many constructively critical comments, and it was redrafted and released on August 20th. We believe the report was completely made over and much improved based on the comments received from this region and others. And it has an improved tone about what can be done to improve our regulatory program and get better source control implemented in the complex setting of agriculture. So there's clear recommendations in this report, and I won't go into all of them. I would note their clear support for the concept of coalitions as an intermediary between water board staff and growers. It's no secret the state water board members believe in the importance of coalitions. And also the panel's recommendation of a ratio of nitrogen applied over a ratio, the recommendation of a ratio of nitrogen applied over nitrogen removed as something to develop and refine as a performance standard that will motivate nitrogen leaching reductions over time. The State Board supports these recommendations. And while I've seen Central Coast Region's concerns about this ratio, I personally believe it builds on what was conceptually developed here and is an improved version because it is based on more on what can be measured rather than what can be guessed about. And that concerns me because you can game the outcome one way or the other. So we'll talk more about this offline, but I will stress the importance of statewide consistency on such monitoring issues. As we saw during our hours-long hearing, there remains some tension still between our regulatory programs and this panel's recommendations. Region 5 staff attended. Of course, they're a lot closer, so you know, it would have been great to have you there, but I understand. But they attended and were concerned about aspects like first encountered groundwater monitoring. You know, is it going to be eliminated? The questions of utility of vulnerability concepts in the Region 5 orders. And we were able to acknowledge these factors and their utility in certain settings during this hearing. So we don't think the panel report actually eliminates such components of the regional irrigated lands programs, and we'll work through these aspects. As I said, you know, Darren Polemus will work with your staff to make these things fit the regional concerns, and, you know, we don't believe in all or nothing, and that was clear in our hearing and Felicia Marcus's comments. So anyway, we take this very seriously. We know you do too, and we'll work with you as we move forward with these recommendations. This summer, we've held two workshops on two statewide water quality plan amendments, one to address trash in waterways and one to address desalination facilities' impacts from both intake of ocean water and discharge back to the ocean. We hope to adopt these statewide standards before the end of the year or early in 2015. You mentioned Santa Barbara. That's one of the issues we're working through is the definition of an existing facility. The State Board's authority to regulate intakes is limited to new or expanded facilities. That's, you know, it's in the regulation. So the definition of whether Santa Barbara is a new or an existing facility relates to our ability to implement intake protection requirements. So we want to work very closely with you, the Central Coast Region, on this issue to ensure that there's a practical approach that assists Santa Barbara with water supply reliability, but it's still consistent with the recommendations of our science panels to best protect marine life. So this is something I really hope that you'll have the ability to work with us on. And I'm confident we'll be able to come to some solution that all can live with. Upcoming activities, I'll note the anti-degradation policy that you're very interested in. The State Water Board is considering preparation of an implementation plan appendix to the existing anti-degradation policy or an additional policy to address the application of the anti-degradation policy to groundwater. The State Water Board has identified this as a priority for this year, and focused stakeholder meetings were held late last year, and the work team composed of members from the State Water Board and regional water boards convened in Sacramento in April and June and in Riverside in August to consider stakeholder comments, review discussion papers, work on the framework for the implementation plan. A white paper on this topic is expected to be completed for internal review and discussion in October 2014. An additional work team meeting, State Water Board executive management and board briefings, and additional focus stakeholder group meetings are expected to take place this fall and winter on these anti-degradation and groundwater. You mentioned the WQCC, the Water Quality Coordinating Committee. As I said last time, Region 3 is always well represented and very appreciated. enthusiastic participation in this collaboration with the other regional water boards and the state water board. As I mentioned last time, stormwater and groundwater strategic initiatives are going to be explored and where they overlap and where integration is needed. On the Friday, I will be leading with the chair of the San Diego Water Board, Region 9, this discussion on wetlands and our regulatory program, but thinking about how we can collectively implement it to achieve multiple benefits that wetlands provide. So, you know, Board Member Johnson's report about Elkhorn Slough and constructed wetlands and using natural treatment capabilities of wetlands to deal with inputs relates to that issue. That could be a great project to talk about, actually. We're going to have a kind of a round table, round robin discussion, and I encourage you to think about wetland projects you're already aware of or participating in or had improved, or ideas that are kind of on the table that you would like to spend some effort, some staff effort, in creating leadership to increase wetland functions and watersheds and achieve water quality standards. The idea I always like to call is, you know, in wetlands, we play a lot of defense. We protect existing wetlands resources and then try to replace them if they have to be filled and that sort of thing with mitigation, right? But there's an opportunity for us to pivot more to offense on wetlands and incorporate that into programs like stormwater protection and others to look at it as a way to improve infrastructure, something you're recently promoted staff scientist Dominic Rock knows all about. On legislation, it has been a landmark year for passing bills for water. Executive Director Tom Howard sent an email this last month to board members saying, you know, in our lifetimes we may not see as much progress in terms of improving, you know, protection of water through legislation. We've heard about the water bond. It was AB 1471. It is now Proposition 1 on this November ballot that's upcoming. Over $7 billion in proposed projects are part of this bond. I won't go into great detail about it. There's a variety of areas that cover areas of our concern, whether it's watershed protection, water supply reliability, flood control, water recycling, you know, the list goes on. I don't mean to leave anything out. One thing that we refer to water security as what integrated regional water management accomplishes. I thought that was interesting and notable that, yes, self-reliance, you know, on the local and regional level for integrated water management is key to our future water security, and that's recognized in the water bond. We were part of the water bond's development and have supported it. You know, it's not perfect. We don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good, and we see it as, you know, another step in the right direction, but the governor warned everyone that we are at our bonding capacity as a state. We'll now, if we issue any more bonds, we'll pay more in bond service than we'll get back in terms of value. So this is it, you know, as far as probably the next decade at least. And it again emphasizes the need for us to use it to develop sustainable institutional structures and sustainable water plans that are watershed based. So we'll see if it passes. But one way or the other, we do need to continue integrated water management. AB 1249 is on the governor's desk by Salas. That talks about integrated regional water management plans, but it highlights where the existing program has been, let's say, imperfect, or there are gaps. And one of those gaps is disadvantaged communities, because a lot of the driving force of integrated water management has been the matching funds, right? So we've seen a lot of success where water and wastewater agencies have had matching funds and have accomplished a lot in integration. But we don't see a lot in stormwater. We don't see a lot in cleaning up nitrate, arsenic, perchlorate, and hexavalent chromium in disadvantaged communities that rely on groundwater. That's an issue that's huge in this region. So AB 1249, it's on the governor's desk. I don't know if it's been signed yet. You never know this time of the year. It may have happened while we were talking. And it endeavors to create requirements for integrated regional water management plans to get funding to address these issues of contamination in disadvantaged communities. I'll note AB 2453 was passed and signed by the governor. Establishes the Paso Robles Basin Water District. I won't go into great detail on this other than it was unique in that the governance structure, took a lot of discussion, but to have a representative governance structure to manage the basin, it's Paso Robles. Now, this is a step in the right direction, clearly, that that State Water Board supports. But I'll point out that, it's not the integrated vision. It doesn't include wastewater or stormwater and that sort of thing, right? So we're going to count on David Licaro, if he's still in the audience. I told him this, too, last time. If he's working on stormwater in Paso Robles, to make sure that these institutions coordinate, because there are great opportunities there for sustainability if there's coordination. And another issue, SB 985, also on the governor's desk, on stormwater resource plans. SB 790 from 2009 had established these. None were done because of no funding and that sort of thing. And so this tries to tie stormwater resource plans that develop stormwater as water supply to be integrated into IRWM plans. So we'll see if that passes. Then the law you've been waiting for, which was SB 1168, SB 1319, and AB 1739, collectively known as the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act, was signed by the governor on September 16th. And we had a lot of involvement in the development of this act, as did the regional boards to some extent in terms of the groundwater strategic work plan. This is very satisfying to see these ideas that from a regional and state level have now found their way into law in terms of expectations for local and regional groundwater management. So moving forward, the question is, okay, how do we get involved? How are we involved? And there were, as I mentioned, positions approved in the governor's budget to work on groundwater sustainability. So I suspect at the MCC level, there'll be discussions about staffing. We'll be working with DWR, Department of Water Resources. They have a lot of requirements for their agency in the next couple of years in getting the program up and running from a technical standpoint. But they are, as part of the back and forth of getting the law passed, they are responsible for regulations being developed. So let's see. Oh, also our staff was involved in drafting actual language in the legislation, and so it was gratifying to see what I think are sound principles of sustainable institutional management for local agencies find their way into the expectations in this act. Certain milestones include next year, DWR will establish the priority basins of the state, and then the following year, identify criteria for updating basin boundaries, which I'm kind of excited about because the groundwater basin boundaries are somewhat geopolitical in some areas of the state that are in Bulletin 118. This is a chance to really get things more aligned with the water cycle where possible, so that it sets the stage for more sustainable institutional management of water. So I expect the regional state boards to be involved in that, since that's our bailiwick, in terms of hydrologic-based water management. Also, the regulations for establishing groundwater sustainability plans will be developed by DWR in consultation with our staff, updating the AB 3030 groundwater management plans. This is where the connection to surface water will be brought in, and sort of sets the stage for more integrated water management. In 2017, entities have to be identified, the agencies or MOUs or JPAs or IRWMs or whatever. It's going to depend on the location, but the entity has to be identified that will exercise the local authorities by mid-2017. If the entity is not identified or enacted, that's the first point where the state backstop, quote unquote, comes into play. So, see, my term is up in 2016, so if I'm not reappointed, nobody will have to ever worry about me stepping in to manage their groundwater basin, because it won't happen until June 30th, 2017 at the earliest. I just say that in fun, but, at that point, there's this great fear of the state board stepping in. And, you know, Senator Pavley said it best. You know, she was the principal author on this. When she was answering questions on the legislative floor about this issue of the state stepping in, she said, it's just like the school districts. You know, the state doesn't want to step in and manage local school districts. But sometimes they need help fiscally, organizationally. The state comes in and leaves as soon as feasible once the program is up and running. This would be a similar dynamic. So that's the 2017 date. And then 2020 for overdrafted basins, that's when the sustainability plans need to be adopted. And then for 2022, the non-overdraft basins is when the sustainability plans would need to be adopted. Those are also points that if they're not adequate as determined by DWR, the State Water Board could step in and help manage the basin. So that's an upshot of the milestones on the Sustainable Groundwater Management Act going forward. I'm sure you have a lot of questions, and thanks for the opportunity to share what's going on in Sacramento. And appreciate all the work you're doing here. I report back enthusiastically about your embracing of the integrated water management concepts here in this region. Thank you.
Thank you for your comprehensive report, as always, Mr. Moore and Mr. Jordan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's really just a question for staff. I'm sure as everybody else, I get the LIRIS notices and sort of followed the expert panel process, and I sort of followed it up until the draft and sort of the tension that was developed as a result of the draft, and I haven't really paid attention to the final result or whether that resolved some of the tension. So I'm just wondering at what point or could we request that we get some type of executive summary of the results of that with the good, the bad, and what should still be worked on that we think wasn't addressed in that regard.
So Steve mentioned the meeting went, and a number of us watched it till 8 o'clock the other night as it was the last item of the day and they had a long day, so it went till 8 o'clock. The board at that point accepted the report, and the directions to Darren and staff were to come to develop a succinct set of recommendations. Not everything in the report will be implemented, so I think the next step is for the regional boards to meet with state board staff and discuss the report and how it fits into our regulatory programs. I think at that point we could give you a summary of what we think is going to come out of the report. My proposal would be that we consider that during the update or the new order, which is due in March of 2017. We're gonna start the process here shortly in terms of beginning public meetings and talking about what the next ag regulatory program is gonna look like, whether it's gonna be WDRs or a waiver, but we would incorporate whatever changes in at that point. So we have a little bit of time.
So my suggestion would be that there would be some benefit, I think, at least from my viewpoint, to having that information in a even more casual manner sooner to digest and do research on, rather than wait until you start the formal process of the ag waiver.
Oh, sure.
So just, you know, I'm sure you have some gut reactions to what took place and whether that's a thumbs up, a thumbs down, or there's still work to do. And just even just reading material or pointing to reading material would be beneficial.
There is the report itself. There is an executive summary which we can share with you.
That'd be great.
And I suspect that we will be meeting sooner than later, I would think this coming month, with Darren and staff to start digesting it and figuring out what we think we can we would consider incorporating into the next order. Okay. We can share that with you.
Thank you.
So I think when I'm talking about timing, we're talking about a month or two before
okay.
we...
Okay, super. Yeah.
Dr. Hunter?
Thank you, Mr. Moore. We are always happy to have you come and give us insight, you know, on all the different ways in which the resources of the state are coming together to focus on some really critical points. But there's one issue that just continues to be on the sideline. I'm not sure why. You mentioned the general order on-site wastewater treatment, and you remarked that this has to do with discharge to land. And we know that in the coastal regions, many of our wastewater systems discharge to creeks. Those creeks discharge to the ocean. We have other discharge that affects marine habitat. And yet we still, to my knowledge, and maybe you can update me, we still have no nitrate or nitrogen standards for what might be considered harmful to the marine environment. I have brought this issue up over time, and people acknowledge that we have no standards when it comes to marine discharge. That includes estuaries. So we're talking about wetlands and estuaries. That's something I'm hoping is moving up the list. I'm not sure why it has been set aside for so many years when we've done so much with the Governor's West Coast Agreement on protecting marine resources. This is an area that seems to be lining up, and I don't know if you have any insight on that for us.
Well, I appreciate you bringing attention to that issue. There is a process underway. You may have received updates on it from staff over time. It's known as the Nutrient Numeric Endpoints process, NNE, Nutrient Numeric Endpoints. And there's a freshwater NNE process and an estuarine NNE process that would apply to Elkhorn Slough and other waters like that. We've been getting annual updates more or less on this. I've been pleased with the direction of it in terms of emphasizing local conditions and scientific based endpoints as opposed to kind of one number, whereas from a regulator standpoint, numbers are helpful and make things simpler, but with nitrate and surface waters, there are other factors that come into play, and it's phosphorus as well. So these issues are, there is technical information that staff can rely on and processes that I think they're participating in kind of a roundtable format. So I think we're making good progress. We don't have adopted standards, though, as you point out. So I think the train is heading the right direction. I'm not sure about the pace of it. And I could have an update for you at the next meeting, and otherwise staff can probably update you.
I appreciate that, because in my last opportunity to talk with some state board staff, they pointed out that we do have narrative descriptions in the basin plans that more or less give us some ability to understand where those discharges are occurring, what ways we have to understand what impacts might occur. But the narrative is not the number. So thank you.
Any question? Mayor Delgado?
Yeah, I just have two. Earlier in your presentation, Stephen, thank you for being always very thorough and covering lots of information. I love it.
I'm sorry. Excuse me, Mr. Delgado. Can you pull the mic a little closer? I don't think you're registering.
Less sites, but more staff, and that's why the fees are going up. So my question is, if there's less sites, why are more staff needed?
That was kind of a general statement. It wasn't really based on a specific analysis. That we're actually at this time struggling a little to explain it, and we think it has to do with just the scale of the program. Because, as I mentioned in my factors, you know, the threat and complexity of dairies, you know, with respect to water is a lot greater than other things like air or toxics. So, you know, we hear from the dairies that our fees are higher. Well, it's because there's more staff effort involved and, you know, in terms of monitoring and inspections and details. You know, I can't get in, at my level, I don't know the actual answer to that, but it's, I think it's a function of scale in a general sense.
Okay, so you can have relatively few sites that are large and complex, requiring a lot of staff. So I guess my question, maybe in the future could answer, is why more staff would be needed than have been in the past?
Yeah, this is just one of those programs where we're struggling to align the fees with the staff level of effort, you know, and to make it affordable. And it's something we're going to be working on closely with stakeholders.
Okay. My other question is, you talked about DWR's regulation role in the new legislations that's passed, and you talked about the state board's role. And I was left uncertain if there would be any role of the regional board.
No, that's an area where I come from a standpoint that we're one organization. We have groundwater experts at the regions. And so I want to encourage as much regional participation as possible in this effort. So I can't say a priori what that will be, but perhaps Ken may have some comments on that.
I think one thing that was that I understand is, at least initially, DWR has the lead on putting the initial programs working with the locals. It's not the water board.
That's right, but we do have these positions, so you know there will be an expectation for us to coordinate and spend time on those efforts, so we won't be left out in the cold.
Okay, but I guess what I'm hearing now is that any of the new positions related to this new legislation will not be coming to the water board, state or regional level.
Yeah.
Well, the legislation itself right now doesn't have any new positions. So last year the state board did get 10, and there is a unit or two now that's established, and they are in the process of staffing up. But the three bills themselves did not create any new positions.
Okay, so I had in my notes the positions were approved for DWR to regulate this law. That was inaccurate. They were.
Now, I don't know about DWR. I'm talking about the water board.
No. I was referring back to that any beginning work on implementing the act at the water boards will be enabled by these positions that were approved in this year's budget, independent of the act. Because there were groundwater sustainability positions that the governor put in the 14-15 budget, because we were already working on a strategic work plan, as I mentioned, and so there's a regional component. I don't know how the math turns out. That's more of an MCC level discussion.
So there were 10 positions. All of them reside in Sacramento. They're all in the Office of Planning and Research. Office of Research, Planning, and Performance, ORPP. They've filled all but one, and that's all I know at this point.
Mr. Johnson?
Along the same lines, so at the point that the designated parties for putting together these sustainability plans have to deliver plans, and I guess there's a couple different points depending on the priority of the basin. Who assesses whether those plans are meet the standard or not? Is that DWR? Is that State Board or State Board possibly?
DWR has the lead role, and they will consult with us.
Okay. So essentially, our role through the whole process is a consulting role at this point.
That's right. And as I mentioned, 2017 is the first possible trigger where the water boards would have a lead role.
And that lead role would be because DWR has determined that the plan doesn't meet the standard, then the lead role would go over to the state board to come up with something that does.
That would be in 2020 for overdraft basins if the DWR referred the basin to the state board.
So the DWR referred in 2017.
And that actually 2017 is when the entity has to be formed okay. that manages the basin with the proper authorities. And if that's not done, there is a possible entry point for the state water okay. board.
Got it. And my other question is, for basins that are in severe overdraft, what's the definition of sustainable? Is that what's coming out is the same as what's going in, or is that a restorative definition? Or I'm sure there's a definition.
I'm sure there's
pages of definitions.
That was a topic of great discussion and debate. It relates to not just safe yield ideas, you know, of not creating overdraft and subsidence, but also in certain basins where there's a surface water, groundwater connection that comes into play. So I think the definition is somewhat site specific.
Okay, but potentially more than just don't take out more than you're putting in.
Yeah, yes.
And finally,
and also ranges too, given that groundwater is our 60% of our statewide water supply during drought, as opposed to more like 40 during non-drought. So groundwater is expected to go down during drought.
I'm impressed by your 12-hour meeting. I would note that in my very short tenure on this board, our record is 16 and a half, an experience we have sworn never to repeat.
I rounded up. It was more like 11 and a half.
I wish you didn't bring that up.
Left scars.
All right. And quick question. If it's in your notes, what is the percentage of increase for fees for the 401 certifications?
Yeah. Yes, there is some range because I mentioned, you know, there's different types of, you know, permit applicants, but the average is 19.7% increase. So that's significant.
So, you know, let's round it off to 20% for sake of conversation.
Yes.
A lot of these projects are strictly environmental benefits. It has no, should we say, you know, economic benefits to other parties. It's strictly for the environment, and often these projects are grant based, matching fund based, etc. So it seems to me that it could have a potential of discouraging projects. I certainly recognize, you know, the issue of limitation associated with staff and somebody's got to pay for it. But, you know, has that entered into some of the conversations as the unintended consequence, I guess, of 20% increase?
Absolutely. And I did try to mention that, but that's really important to me. Given that, you know, we're advocating to make more wetlands as part of infrastructure, we need to gauge, you know, the light touch mm-hmm. approach to enable them, and I think there's a lot of consensus on that. So that's why there is a lower fee schedule for ecological restoration projects. So instead of being in the, you know, over $1,000, $1,200, $1,500, it's been structured to $200, $200, $200. So $200 fee for application, $200 for annual renewal. So if you do it quickly, there's no annual renewal. And then $200 for the post-monitoring where necessary. But we're really trying to have a light touch on ecological restoration because presumably those who are restoring ecology know what to look for and don't need to be heavily regulated to report performance measures and such. So we're trying to have the right level of touch to encourage ecological restoration. But it has to be done correctly.
Yeah, because my understanding, and Mr. Harris, correct me if my memory played tricks on me, but wasn't that a little bit of an issue potentially with the Salinas project in terms of the fee associated with it?
Yes, but the fees that Mr. Moore talked about, those were like minimum, and it does depend on the scale of the project. The project for Salinas was doesn't fit the definition of a restoration project, so it's more in the normal category. Also, it comes under the previous fee schedule, which is good for them because they, on all the criteria, they maxed out on everything. And if we had not completed that 401 in time, and the state board, you know, they adopted the new fees and they were approved by Office of Administrative Law, they could have come under a higher fee. But yeah, theirs does not come under the small restoration fee.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. So I think we, you know, we will have more opportunities throughout the day to link up here.